We are just deeply honored to have you, Andrew, we're just thrilled that this is our last round for this year.
Oh,
is it the second to last? Okay, anyway, we're just delighted that you are here with us today.
I am thrilled to be with you. I love you. I love all of the work that you do. I'm so honored. And I'm so honored that Carolyn's on this call, because Carolyn's a big kahuna who teaches me a great deal. Carolyn, good God, it's amazing that God invented Carolyn, actually.
We think so, too.
She's indefatigable and so sober and clear about everything. I love her work. Deeply.
Amazingly productive, gosh.
Amazingly. Amazing.
It's been delightful,
she's
too.
She's the unstoppable force. She is the unified force field, actually.
It's been delightful to get to know Carolyn and her work and to realize what kindred spirits we all are.
Yeah.
Well, you've made a huge impact in her life, too. Very deep. It's wonderful. We're all coming together. We need each other so much.
Yeah.
Carolyn, I've just unmuted you so you can pop in with a word or two.
Well, thank you all for those very kind remarks. And Andrew has transformed my life, as has the work of Core Light. So I just love all of you deeply.
Oh,
back at you.
Back to you, kid.
Yes. Right back at you. Now, we're going to do a recording of today's call. So, Victoria, have you started the recording, or shall we do that now?
I actually have started it.
Okay. But
we can, you know, use the editing software if we need.
Well, let's just begin with a welcome. I want to welcome everybody to our course here, a forum for a tipping point, collaborative global healing and transformation. And this is session 11 of 12. We're almost complete with our year. We've been meeting once a month for a year, Andrew, and it's we're just delighted to have you on the call. As we said, the topic we're going to discuss today with you, Andrew Harvey, is with us today, is the beauty and power of Indigenous wisdom. And we had everybody on the call watch the two exquisite videos that you did by interviewing Uncle Bob Randall, who's also who's known as the Australian Dalai Lama in many circles. And hopefully everybody's had a chance to watch the movies. If you haven't had a chance, the link is posted on Caucus, and the two movies are there. You can see how to get them. They're downloadable.
And please share them with your friends. It's something so unusual, unique, in fact, what happened, because Bob isn't somebody who gives interviews very often. And I think it was a very great honor to be able to be in that radiant heart space with him. He's an adored personal friend, but he really opened up extraordinarily in those videos and gives, I think, a direct transmission beyond words of what Indigenous wisdom is. If you want to know Indigenous wisdom, watch Bob. Listen to him, of course, but watch him. Watch that unbelievable groundedness and subtlety and tenderness and deep attentiveness to everything around him. He's living it.
And I would add, Andrew, to feel him, because really there's a transmission that comes from his voice, and it comes from just being with him. And it's a powerful transmission, and you can feel it from the videos. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's
palpable. Too, that it's something very important to understand about Bob, is that Bob was taken away from his family at 7. He had an Aboriginal upbringing and then was force-fed into this nightmarish Christian system that tried to separate him from his native roots. But when he rediscovered them, they healed him. They empowered him. So it isn't that you're looking at someone who has always lived in the Aboriginal stream. You're looking at somebody who went through an enormous process to reclaim the depth of his Aboriginal training and was healed and transformed by it himself.
And isn't that unconditional love? Isn't that the experience of complete forgiveness of your oppressor?
Yes.
So what did you feel, Andrew, when you were interviewing him, to be with somebody the only people that I know of that I've heard of who have done that sort of thing are people like Nelson Mandela, and that's quite a remarkable experience to be with someone like that. So what was your experience?
Well, I think it's an experience of the key to the transformation of the planet. I've just finished a book called Hope in Action, a handbook for sacred activism. And what it is fundamentally an expansion of the seven laws that I outline in the Hope, but an adding of one law. And the law that I've added is the law of unconditional forgiveness. I don't think we have a hope in heaven of being able to deal with the exploding madness of our crisis unless all of us learn how to forgive unconditionally the beings that have created this crisis and ourselves for colluding with the creation of this crisis. Because if there is any hatred in our hearts, any outrage that is purely vindictive or revengeful, we are going to be contaminated at such a depth by the pain that is out there that we will not be able to find the resources of peace and passion and joy and stamina that we're going to need to go forward. So it's true that it's very rare to find people who have mastered the very difficult art of unconditional forgiveness, but there are, of course, amazing public examples like Nelson Mandela and the Dalai Lama. But there are also extraordinary, ordinary people that I meet all over the world who have been through absolutely horrific tests and have come out of it radiant. And that, I think, is a huge sign for all of us. So when I was with Bob, what I felt was that Bob was representing to me and to everyone what can happen to a human being who has finally given up rage, finally given up the desire to be special and better than anyone else, and finally and absolutely committed himself or herself to a life of absolute humble service in the name of interconnected love with everything. That is the key shift, I feel, that indigenous wisdom and spiritual wisdom of all kinds is inviting us to make.
You're reminding me, Andrew, of a story that you wrote about in The Hope. And maybe you'll just recount that story for us on the call for people who may not have read that part or don't remember it. And it's the story of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee in South Africa. And there was a woman who gave an act of forgiveness that was extraordinary.
That is the key story, in a way, of The Hope for me, because that's sacred activism at its most pure and most transformative. There was a woman who had lost both her husband and her son in appalling circumstances. And in her case, the man who'd been responsible for the death of both her husband and her son was a man called Dr. Verwerk. And through the reconciliation process, she was brought face to face with the man who had caused her all of this horror. And the judge said to her, "What would you like to say to this man?" And she gazed at the man and said, "First of all, I would like you to take me to the place where you tortured and murdered my son, because I've never had his body, and I would like a little bit of the dust from the place where he died." And then she said, "And I would like you to be my son and to come and visit me once a month, because I have nobody left in my life and I have a great deal of love to give, and I would like to give it to you." And then she said, because she was an old woman and found walking very difficult, she said to the two women standing beside her, she said, "Please support me as I walk across the courtroom and hold him in my arms and show him that he has truly been forgiven." And as she walked across the courtroom, Dr. Verwerk fainted, and the whole courtroom began to sing Amazing Grace. And there are many details in that story that I have meditated on again and again, but perhaps the most important one is that Dr. Fairbairn fainted. And what that fainting for me represents is the absolutely shattering breakthrough into his dark world of the purest imaginable divine light that she was transmitting through her monumental and sacred act of forgiveness. That he was initiated at that moment through her love into the truth of a love that he had never begun to imagine. That's the power of forgiveness when it springs from these primordial sources. That's the power that I think all sacred activists now need to get attuned to. And I think it's a power that comes from, in her case, she was a very passionate Christian, case of the old lady. But I've seen that power of unconditional forgiveness in many, many native tribes that I've had connection with, tribes that have been through absolute hell. They are not in a state of fury against those who have done this to them. They are in a state of great grief, but part of their great grief is for those who have oppressed them, because they know that to do something as terrible as what they're doing is going to have the most massive and terrible implications for them. So I've been stunned talking to native tribes all over the world to find out, for example, that many of them were praying for the people who were destroying their lives, because they knew, as the Dalai Lama knows in China, that those who are doing this terrible work of destruction that is so operative in our world are, of course, destroying themselves. That's a very key perception, and the perception that only radical knowledge of interdependence, which is the key to indigenous wisdom and to all spiritual wisdom, can give you. Does that ring true for you, Brad and Leslie?
Oh God. We were actually present. We watched that on television at the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. We watched the whole thing, and that was one of the ones that just, stood out just astoundingly, sort of tore our hearts open. You remember that, Brad, don't you?
Yes, I think it was actually a documentary we were watching where they shared some of that footage.
We were watching it live, Brad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Wow.
Yeah, we were. I don't know if we were in this country or in South Africa, but we watched it. I remember just being, I don't even have words.
Leslie, tore your heart open. Isn't that the power that we're talking about? It is a power to tear the heart open, even and perhaps most especially in conditions in which it has been tragically closed. And there can be no future without holding out the possibility of the hearts of those who are doing this work of dark destruction, consciously or unconsciously, having their hearts torn open by truth, by love, by the beauty of this holy planet. We have to hold that possibility in the core of our hearts, otherwise the situation that we're living in can so easily paralyze us with despair.
Yes. Well, actually, Brad and I, we actually had a conversation this morning, because I get so afraid of what's going to happen to Africa as the Americans and the Chinese start moving in there.
Oh, yes.
And, Africa really is my soul.
Yes.
And I just can't bear the thought of seeing the whole continent torn up.
It's terrifying. And it's already happening on such a terrifying scale, isn't it?
Because
the Chinese have bought up huge areas of African land, which they're going to use to feed Chinese people.
Yes.
God knows what's going to happen to the African poor who are already living in horrific circumstances.
Well, the truth is,
and then
is
you have the whole devastation of wildlife, that in the last 40 years, half of African wildlife, in fact, wildlife all over the world, has been destroyed. And in 11 years, we will have no elephants, because every 15 minutes, an elephant is killed to give some Chinese or Vietnamese official an erection. Haven't they heard of Viagra, these people? That's what they want?
That's, Andrew, that's the rhino horn.
Yeah.
Well, and yes, it is the rhino.
But the elephants, too, they're making the trinkets. They're making trinkets out of the ivory. So it's true for both the elephants and the rhinos. And it's absolutely insane.
That's a travesty on the leaf, really.
That every 15 minutes is the fact for the elephants. It is. If a rhino was killed every 15 minutes, they'd be gone already. But Andrew's right. Every 15 minutes, an elephant is killed for their tusks.
Mm-hmm. And it's not. I'm sure it's not much different for rhinos because we know they're disappearing at a phenomenal rate. So
yeah,
it's
like 600 and something a year in South Africa.
Yeah. So, you know, what this conversation brings up for me is one of the themes that we've been working on, Andrew, in this forum that we've all shared for the last year. It's this shifting that the whole world is going through, the overall shifting, what we call it the victim tyrant consciousness, and it's the moving from that polarity, which is held in the third chakra, the polarity of victim and tyrant, and it's as we move through that and as we balance that polarity, we move into this new paradigm of the heart. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about with these examples of people, whether they're indigenous or religious or whoever they are.
Yes.
They're finding the ascended balance between that polarity, which is a heart state. It's qualities of
It's only
heart.
A heart state, isn't it? Because only the sacred heart, fully awake and fully conscious of interdependence and the potential sacredness of every being, can find the power to forgive and to continue working for justice in impossible circumstances.
Yes.
But I think it's very important, since we're talking about indigenous wisdom, to really, really make as precise a description as possible of the kind of heart space that we're talking about. And I thought that I'd read to you three paragraphs from a speech that Orrin Lyons gave on an address to the United Nations in 1977, because for me, these three paragraphs contain the absolute essence of what the indigenous peoples have to communicate to us. And I believe that there will be no transformation, real transformation, without a total honoring of the base of all of our religious experience, without which the rest of it becomes airy and transcendent and dissociated, and that is the base of indigenous wisdom. So may I read these three paragraphs out to everybody? Because
Please.
For me, this is the complete education of the heart that the indigenous wisdom offers us.
Yes, please.
Power is not manifested in the human being. True power is in the Creator. If we continue to ignore the message by which we exist and we continue to destroy the source of our lives, then our children will suffer horribly. I must warn you that the Creator made us all equal with one another, and not only human beings, but all life is equal. The equality of our life is what you must understand and the principles by which you must continue on behalf of the future of this world. Economics and technology may assist you, but they will also destroy you if you do not use the principles of equality. Profit and loss will mean nothing to your future generations. And then Orrin Lyons stood up, apparently, and looked around the United Nations, all those guys in suits. And he said something which blows your brains out when you really consider what the truth of what he's trying to get across. He said, "I don't see a delegation for the four-footed. You call yourself the United Nations. But I see no seat for the eagles."
Oh, my goodness.
We forget and we consider ourselves superior. But we are, after all, a mere part of the creation, and we must continue to understand where we are. And we stand between the mountain and the ant, somewhere and there only, as part and parcel of the creation. It is our responsibility, since we have been given the minds and hearts to take care of these things. The elements and the animals and the birds, they live in a state of grace. They are absolute. They can do no wrong. It is only we, the two-leggeds, that can do wrong. And when we do wrong to our brothers and sisters, to our own brothers and sisters, then we do the worst in the eyes of the Creator. I think that's a comprehensive statement, because he starts out by giving us the essence of the indigenous wisdom, which is power is not manifested in the human being. True power is in the Creator. The entire universe is a manifestation of a mysterious love intelligence that we need to adjust and align our whole being with. And if we continue to ignore this message, then our children will suffer horribly. And then the second principle, which is derived from that, which is an immense bitch slap to our Western hubris and to the hubris of many of the transcendental mystical systems, which have claimed unique specialness for human beings, unique specialness for human consciousness. And as anybody out there knows who has a very deep relationship with animals, the consciousness of animals is a sublime consciousness, very often with sometimes greater qualities of tenderness and psychic awareness than we have. And for us to imagine that we are the only high beings and that everything is on the earth for us and that we have the right to dominate, exploit, and degrade everything is a dangerous and lethal fantasy, which is now ensuring, if we continue with it, our devastating demise. So when he says, I must warn you that the Creator made us all equal with another, you can hear that and say, oh yes, how lovely, and yes, we're all equal with everything. But it's not lovely. It is a huge, huge deconstruction of thousands of years of crazy history. And not only human beings are equal, but all life is equal. That means at the deepest level, and I found this with Bob again and again and again as we were walking around his land, that means that you and the bug are equal. You and the little witch tea grub that Bob picked up and cuddled and talked to, you and the snake that came to visit us on the last day of filming that stayed on the balcony, and we were all frightened of it because it was a big poisonous snake. Bob walked up fearlessly to it, stood about a foot from it, and started talking to it very reverently and said, look, you know, you're scaring all the Westerners here. They don't realize that you're really a very sweet creature. Do you mind if you just go back a little? And the snake looked at him and nodded and quietly slid off and then went off about 50 yards away. Bob knows that all life is equal, so he has the deep, deep capacity within himself to speak to all life with great reverence and to be obeyed by all life. But that's not a dominator model, that's a lover model. And then he turns and says, you'll never be a real human race, is really what he's saying. You'll never be a true human race until you understand that all power is in the Creator, that all life is equal, and until you make that understanding the center of your world institution, the United Nations. How can you call yourself the United Nations when it's only human beings that are represented here? How can you call yourself united? Where are the bear nations? Where are the lion nations? Where are the elephant nations? Why haven't you understood that if you're going to be guardians of the creations, you need to have the creation, you need to have representatives of the creation, and you need to have lawyers standing up for the rights of the creation against the terrible destructiveness of corporate madness? And he then makes this very deep distinction, which is at the core of indigenous wisdom, between us and the animals, which is not a distinction of power over or superiority over, but a distinction of responsibility. We have been given the minds and hearts to take care of these things. We have been given a role by the Creator, which is not the dominator role, but which is the role of tender, humble guardian of life. And until we know that is our role, we will continue to create for ourselves societies which are based on illusion and which are doomed to destruction.
And Andrew, what do you think what is it going to take for humanity to wake up to that realization?
I think it's going to take almost total destruction. I don't think humanity has shown any real desire yet to wake up. After all, we're living in 2015. The latest reports, even from the most conservative environmental bodies like the IPCC, are so dire, so drastic, that if humanity was listening, there would already be millions on the streets saying, we have got to change everything fast to have any hope whatever of surviving the monumental crisis that we've created. So I think all of us have to face that we're living in a humanity that has been so devastated inwardly, so traumatized inwardly too by the facts of its appalling behavior, and so rendered so addicted by its pursuit of false power, that it's going to be impossible to change it without terrible destruction. And of course, the thing that is now utmost for all of us is whether or not this destruction will be partial and terrible, or total and definitive. Those are the two options, I think, that face humanity. Either a terrible destruction in which we will live in remnants in a very degraded environment, or total destruction in which we will be annihilated and take a great deal of nature with us. I wish I could say something more hopeful, but I think that would be an illusion.
And maybe that is hopeful, actually. You know, maybe if that's what it takes, it's like the person who's diagnosed with cancer and has to be taken down to nothing, but then a miracle happens in consciousness, and
yes, it does. That's
they
where
can have
can
a breakthrough.
Place our hope. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think once you've really faced this, and I don't mean faced it intellectually, that's the first step, and then faced it emotionally through going through tremendous heartbreak and despair and paralysis and desolation, because you cannot avoid that when you really see where we are, because we're not just talking about our own lives ending, we're talking about the whole enterprise of human culture, the whole enterprise of human spirituality, the whole of this glorious world that we've been given to God being irremediably devastated by our cruelty, our madness, our hubris, our vanity, our terrible, terrible vanity. Mm-hmm. When you take that in, your heart is going to be absolutely shattered. And then you have to take it into the depths of your soul. And that's where the hope comes, because all the great mystical systems have shown us that for the birth of the divine in the human really to be installed, the human ego has to go through a dark night, a mega death. You cannot install the fullness of divine consciousness in a human being who's still clinging to psychic and emotional illusions. So the great gift of our crisis is that it makes impossible clinging to any illusion about anything. And there's terror when you face that, but that terror can cleanse the perception of your whole being so that you come at the most primordial level to understand and understand that it is only by turning to the deathless within that you will have any chance of living a meaningful and peaceful and dignified life of sacred action in a world like this. And that, I have found, is a huge gift. Rumi says in one of his great poems, he says, love the friend not for his beauty, but for his tyranny. And the lover and the arrogant lover in you will become an lover that weeps. If you can face the ferocity, the finality, the fury, the devastation of who we become and what we are doing, and you can face that with some kind of faith and in the depths of spiritual practice, then what will be unveiled to you is that though it may be true that the world will go, what is living in you as your essential you can never go because it was never born and it will never die. And that unveiling at the core of this devastation of deathless consciousness, deathless love, deathless compassion, is what's now taking place in hundreds of thousands of people on the earth. And it is a birth. It's a birth of a humanity purified of tragic illusion, holding to the ground of its essential relationship with divine consciousness, and continuing to love and to act from that consciousness, whatever happens. And I've found that that's the place that God has taken me to. And it's a place of great peace and of great focus and of great love. And the more you can stay in it through deep spiritual practice, the more radiant your life will become and the more effective your actions will become. And by effective, I don't mean that your actions will transform this situation absolutely and that suddenly all the rich will start giving their money away and the politicians will become intelligent and the business people will start worrying about the 2 billion people that are living on less than a dollar a day. I don't mean that. I mean that even in terminal situations, which is quite frankly what we're probably going to face, you'll still be able to continue radiating compassion and love and peace and joy, because you know that what lives in you can never die.
Thank you, Andrew. So beautifully said.
Do you agree with me, Leslie? Is that what you're seeing?
Oh, Andrew, of course I do. I'm just absolutely riveted by what you're saying, and you can verbalize things that I haven't been able to. So it just is brilliant and wonderful. Thank you. I'm totally where you are. I completely get it.
You've been through this process yourself, and I've watched you and Brad, who've been working so deeply and so passionately in so many ways to help, come to the moment where I think we all came to, which is that all the work that we've done over all of these years, and I'm now 63 and you're in those 60s, has not turned the human race around. So I think at that moment we all became enormously disheartened and went through a shattering, another shattering.
That's true, yes. Yes,
then
out of that
emerged something very mysterious,
exactly.
And I felt that mysterious birth in you, and I'd love it if you could share what happened to you in the last bit, because I've watched it.
It's been an ongoing journey, you know, for me, growing up in the apartheid system and watching the suffering of the black people and trying to come to terms with that and never really managing to do that in terms of what's fair in life and so on. And I just was emotionally traumatized by the time I left left South Africa. I had tracked it since about the age of 10, the developing states of abuse and superiority and just horrendous treatment of not only the black people but the animals and so on. This inability to see the beauty of soul and life and so on. I left. I think I felt like I was running away from apartheid at that point, but in fact I've come to understand that I was being sent to the U.S. because a new journey was beginning here as well, and it's the same journey, really, the callous indifference and the superiority and ego everywhere, just blocking truth, blocking anyone's sensitivity and ability to see what really matters. And I suppose...
And fundamentally, it's a separation from the creation, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
From the animal divine, from the radiance of the life force that glitters as in every stone and every tree and every animal.
Absolutely.
That tragic dissociation has divorced us from our true selves, divorced us from the nature of the creation, divorced us from the true nature of the divine, which is transcendent and immanent, and rendered us lonely, desperate narcissists condemned to creating systems which are based on death and not life.
Well, they're lost souls completely. Yeah. They've lost touch with everything, and I can only wonder at the their demise, where they will go and what it will feel like, and this addiction to money that is running rampant in a way that wasn't happening even, 5 years ago.
Well, I think as the trauma deepens, as the horror becomes more evident, the most tragic reaction is happening, which is that people are going into radical denial and stepping up their greed and their grasping, as if
money will somehow save you. Yes, exactly. Yes, money will
Isn't
save you.
Isn't that what's going on?
Absolutely, but on a grand scale, with a quality of mania since I've never seen. The only way that I can hold that is by realizing that none of it's real, in a sense,
None of it's finally real, yeah.
Yes.
It's real in this dimension of terror, yes. And it's going to cost terribly, but in the absolute, which you know, there is no evil, there is no cruelty, there is only a mass of bliss and joy and love.
And then there's this blindness and madness and frenzy of younger souls. I can only say they must be younger souls, that they don't have the sensitivity to see a reality and that equality that you described a little while ago, the profound equality between us and a mouse or a snake, or that these are
fly in the sink.
Absolutely.
I watched so-called spiritual seekers. I remember being with somebody and she was doing the washing up and there were five little flies there and she just casually annihilated them. And I thought, my God, you know nothing of the nature of God. You spend whatever time you have to get those flies out of the sink, let them live. Why shouldn't they live their lives?
Yeah, well, that's the ego, isn't it?
That's the necessity of indigenous
superiority,
soul,
exactly.
It?
Yes, because of the superiority of the non-indigenous people everywhere.
But both you and Brad have been through a transformation this year, which I've noted. And that is from deep, deep despair and rage, sacred rage at what's going on, to a deep sense of what is still possible and the great gift that we've been trying to talk about. And I'd love to hear about it in your own words,
well,
because I respect you so much.
We had to work our way through the despair,
yes.
And that took quite a while. And I'm not even sure why it went away. I think we're still hopeful for a tipping point, and that will bring around some common sense and some realizations. It's like a war, Everybody gets all excited and they go off and they do the war and then they get beaten up and they suffer and then they don't want war anymore. So, that I think is the only chance, and that will bring about a tipping point.
But there has to be a hope beyond even the tipping point. I think I would say to you, Leslie, that we have to be able to find a hope that doesn't depend even on the survival of the planet.
Yes. Well,
because the only hope that can be strong enough to help us weather whatever we now have to face, which could include extinction and the death of the planet,
is
a hope that is based in transcendent truth.
Yes, yes.
So I struggle like you for the tipping point. I hope that people will wake up. I do everything I can to ensure that, to provide the information that would be useful to the maps, the vision, everything. But I don't invest myself in that outcome. Because I think that can be another trap, because it may be that we're going to have to face the death of the human
race
in our time very soon. And that means that you and I and all those called to be true spiritual beacons of love will have to find a strength in us which does not depend on any result.
Yeah, I think that Brad and I are have come to accept our death, come to accept failure, come to accept the end of this amazing journey in this amazing world, and the sadness even about the mistakes that brought about the end, and the misperceptions and so on, and the ego that has run the show for so long, and the loss of everything. I think we've made our peace with it, and in that we both are, you know, doing our best in every way. We're keeping on with keeping on, you know, but we don't have expectations anymore, I don't think. It doesn't mean that we are turning up our toes and saying, oh, well, it's all lost. We don't think that at all.
No.
We've made our peace with failure and loss and our own death.
It would be all lost if you did curl up your toes.
Yes.
Because there wouldn't be people on the earth willing to represent essential human dignity come what may.
Of course.
So, well, that's our last place.
That's all we have, you know.
Yes, but it's all we've ever had, really.
It's true.
I think one of the great advantages of this crisis is that it shows very clearly the complex set of completely fatuous illusions that human nature has been bound on.
Exactly.
And once you get over the horror and the heartbreak of that and the agony of that, then you can be initiated into what the native peoples know, the greatness of the Creator, the equality of all life, the beauty and holiness of the creation. And that will give you the strength to go through whatever you have to go through.
Absolutely. I think we're on our way. It's been, the last couple of years have been horrendous. But I think we both feel as though we're on our way with that. And more, you know, there could be all kinds of obstacles along the way. But we've both found a place of peaceful functionality, whereas before the functionality was definitely impeded by the fear and the despair
yes.
was just enormous, and it's still there. I can still bring it up, but I'm not in it all the time anymore.
Well, in the sense that despair is the last hold of the ego.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ramana Maharshi is not in despair.
No.
Ramana has seen the incineration of the world by the light, the incineration of all illusion by the truth, the destruction of reality completely by the great light that transforms it and creates it at all moments.
Yes.
So he's no longer in illusion at all, but living as the self. That's the only position that we can take at this moment, and it's the only position that we could ever have taken. So in a sense, what the apocalypse, which means unveiling in Greek, is unveiling to us is two related things. On the one hand, the complete dereliction and degradation of all of our illusions and the price for all of those illusions which we have put into practice, and on the other, the part of us that cannot be in illusion because it is given to us by the divine. It is the divine consciousness that lives within forever.
Yes.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, gosh, yes. And maybe that's the most important thing, that the earth itself and all the dramas that have ever been played out were just our toys, our journey to waking up to this truth.
It may very well be that.
It's where we, you know, cut our teeth, so to speak, and begin to see what matters and what's real, and then the peacefulness comes in, and that the earth, God bless it, but it's expendable, in terms of eternity.
Yes,
it's just our playground. It's where what spirit once called the separating of the wheat from the chaff. And that means, you know, us letting go of our egoic dramas and and our limitations and our selfishness and so on, and discovering the truth.
And that's what indigenous wisdom is so brilliant at guiding us to. When you look at somebody like Bob, who knows everything about tragedy, horror, affliction, dominator consciousness, the oppression of the West, of everything, who has lived it, who's scarred with it, who's been crucified by it. When you look at him, he's also been resurrected into a very deep, tender, loving, humble peace.
Yes.
And that tender, loving, humble peace comes from his radical intuitive knowledge of equality and of true relationship with everything that is. And he's sustained at invisible levels by that very embodied radiance of the creation.
Yes.
And I find that at this moment, I'm living in Arkansas in a log cabin in the middle of nowhere. I look out on deer and leaves and coyotes and paths leading into quiet, quiet meadows. And I found that I'm not only sustained by the deathless I am that is being uncovered in me, but I'm sustained by the I am that is living as every leaf and as every stone. And that when you combine and fuse in the depths of yourself a realization of your innate divine nature with a deep and humble realization of the presence in and as everything, then you find two interlinked sources of strength so deep that they can hold you up through everything.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Yes, it is. And even the poignancy when you look out of your window and you see, you know, something that isn't quite right out there, and that poignancy is okay. It's bearable. It's
part bearable. Of the life of the heart, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Right. But it seems that, I don't know if you feel this, but as what I'm uncovering is that the real divine heart is, of course, a complex marriage of opposites, or a simple and radiant marriage of opposites. On the one hand, you discover this heart that is calm, peaceful, infinitely spacious, holds all things, life and death, in its unfolding. And on the other hand, you are baptized into a heart that is excruciatingly sensitive. But the excruciatingly sensitive heart is held in the arms of the great peaceful heart. So you can bear what you have to know, and you can bear what you have to feel, because you can always feel what Oren Lanz is talking about, the equality of life, the greatness of the Creator, the radiance of the presence of grace in the created world. And that gives you the strength to feel what you have to feel to stay divinely human.
Absolutely. And then there's also this looking at the world, seeing the dualities that are there, and understanding, if you can really grasp and understand duality, or if you can understand non-duality. You can understand duality from the perspective of non-duality.
Yes, that's
and
the only
all
way.
Of those details that you mentioned, you know, the dark and the light, you can truly feel the ascension and into oneness. If you allow it, allow both to be present, they unify and you lift yourself into eternal oneness. So,
yes.
And
that's
and,
what you mean by ascension.
Yes. And,
you mean
and,
the living embodiedly of eternal oneness.
Yes.
I hear you.
Yes.
Because some of the ways in which that word has been used have been very dissociated and disembodied.
Oh, okay.
And
no.
That's one of the dangers of that word, because ascension, so many of the great mystical systems have been addicted to transcendence. Whereas I think, from my deep knowledge of you, what you mean by ascension is coming into the fullness of our divine identity
exactly.
while remaining absolutely in the body and committed to serving the embodied Godhead, the creation.
Well, you're looking at all the pieces disparate pieces, and you're seeing them as all one. You see how it all comes together. And this is a profound time for humans to actually see the dark and the light juxtaposed. And then the melding together of both sides, and you have wholeness. There, you know, there's the I call it transcendence, because the consciousness is lifted way beyond the third dimension at that.
Oh well, yes, absolutely. It has to be grounded in transcendence.
Yes.
But then the transcendence has to descend into this. It has to be both that and this dancing together, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, we're not there yet, but...
No, but we're going to get there. That's
Everything's in such high relief, you can't miss it, you know? You can't pretend anymore. It's just in your face. So
One of the things that I know you and I share, and Brad shares, and many people, I imagine, on this call share, is that once you connect at a deep level with indigenous wisdom, you are made aware of what for me is the most terrifying aspect of our human madness, which is the way in which we treat animals. Because once you've been awoken to the sacredness of the creation, and once you've really, through your own experience, felt not only the love of animals, not only the enormous compassion that animals have, but their sacred wisdom, their unique sacred wisdom, and the power of that wisdom to transform and help human beings, then what we're doing to animals becomes almost the most terrible thing that we do, and for me, the most terrible thing that we do, because in butchering and killing the habitats of animals and treating animals with such desperate cruelty, what we are acting as is, in fact, global serial killers. Serial killers always begin by torturing animals before they get onto humans. And our complete dereliction of life is expressed most frighteningly for me in the way in which we just sit back sipping our Mai Tais while 200 species vanish every day.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
If you come into connection with indigenous wisdom, it's going to give you calm and peace and an initiation into the radiance of the creation, but it's also going to shatter your heart open to the appalling brutality of our treatment of the creation and involve you in profound responsibility to act decently to rectify that horrible treatment.
Well, there's a huge learning curve for a huge number of people taking place right now, then. Exactly. That is what they need to learn.
It is, and I think that's why the indigenous traditions have to be at the base of our enterprise.
Yes.
I've just given a class for Shift on the divine human, on the human journey to divinization, to what you would call ascension, and which I call the birth of the divine human. And I made it clear that there can be no birth without a reclamation and a restoration of indigenous wisdom, because unless we're grounded here, unless we're grounded in the animal divine, unless we truly understand our place in this creation and live humbly in that place, then all the other realizations that are given by the transcendental traditions can become sources of dissociation and vanity and hubris and megalomania and not be attuned to the reality of what we are and where we are. That's been my living experience. I've been through that myself.
I understand, yes. Years of frustration watching, living in a country where there were indigenous people, lots of them, more indigenous people than there were other, mostly white
colonizers.
Colonizers. It was quite an education, I have to say, because it was in your face all the time.
You were living in microcosm, the macrocosmic reality of a corporate-dominated world, sterile and brutal.
Yes.
Because that colonialist dominator mentality possesses everything, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly was. So the juxtaposition of these two positions, these two situations, was what I cut my teeth on. And the angst that I went through and the learning that took place with all of that was what shaped me really in every way. And now, you know, we're watching this happen in high relief with the stakes are very high on all of this right now.
It's interesting, you know, we keep circling back to apartheid. Apartheid's been mentioned several times in this conversation. And wouldn't you say that we're now in a global apartheid? It's been taken to a whole new level. And the word apartheid, literally translated, is separation. And so here we are being taken to this whole new level where we're all having to face our own apartheid, the apartheid of the colonizing race of the planet, the apartheid of the patriarchy, if you want to call it that.
Yes, well, the relationship between people and animals, that's an apartheid too.
What about the relationship of people and the poor? That's an apartheid.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And to also come back to what Andrew's point was in the very beginning about how we need to come into the heart and find the place where we've transcended that polarity of victim and tyrant, and where we come into the heart and find forgiveness for our own inner Dick Cheneys and our own inner patriarchy.
I love what you say, because in a sense you can only transcend the polarity of victim and tyrant when you truly face your own victimhood, and the tyrant lives within you. So what you're really, we're all being asked to do shadow work at the most ferocious level.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Shadow work to expose our horror at what's happening, our sense of violation, and shadow work to expose how much we've unconsciously or consciously become the violators.
Perpetrators, yes.
Mm. Yes, and you know, what an amazing journey this is. I think what we're coming to in the conversation is the realization that here we are at this moment in our human evolution, and it's a first. It's unprecedented. And we get to experience this journey, and we get to resolve it somehow inside of us. And this is it. This is it, you know. And I don't know, Andrew, about you, what I come to with this is that it all comes down to love, and it all comes down to how can I, and I know everybody on this call has been working with this particular question, which I wanted to ask you, how can I, as an individual, make this journey, navigate this chaos, this intensity, this madness, how can I navigate these difficulties and still hold on to my inner light and still wake up to my transcendent self and still love and still be full of light and an inspiration to other people and live in the light? So how do you respond to something like that?
Well, I think there are three things that everybody has to do. First of all, you have to make the most fundamental and radical commitment to spiritual practice, because unless you do, you will never be unveiled to your deep self. There is no way in which you can ever experience at the depth that you're going to need to experience the transcendental self unless you have made the most fundamental decision that you could ever make, which is to turn up daily in daily rigorous alignment of your whole being with the divine. That's the first thing, and that has to be the foundation, I believe. The second thing is that you do have to commit yourself to profound shadow work, because you have to end the dichotomy of the victim and tyrant in yourself by understanding at the deepest level your victimhood and your perpetrator. And that's a very grueling but very beautiful journey, because at the beginning of it, you're appalled by what you discover. But as you allow yourself to take in the great creative wisdom of the shadow, you realize that that creative wisdom will give you so many skillful means to deal with the people, which means almost everybody, in fact, who are really still in the thrall of the shadow. Instead of projecting your own unhealed projections onto others, you will have accepted your own role in all the madness and then accepted your humble responsibility of turning up as a lover, even of those who are creating the destruction. That's the second really important work.
Just a lot of forgiveness involved, yeah.
Yes, self-forgiveness and a radical commitment to unconditional forgiveness.
Yes, yes.
The third thing is that you won't have a chance of being love in a situation like this until you've made the third most important decision that you can make, which is to turn up as a sacred activist, turn up as someone who has allowed their radical heartbreak to guide them to a mission, which they then devote themselves and their resources and their skills and their minds and their hearts to fulfilling. Whether or not that mission works is not up to you. That is in the hands of the divine. What is up to you is your decision to turn up, to give everything away, to gamble your life for God.
Mm-hmm.
So if you combine deep, deep commitment to practice with deep, deep commitment to shadow work, with a deep and fundamental commitment to sacred action on behalf of what is deeply painful to you, then slowly but surely, you will be fed directly by the divine the strength and the peace and the passion that you need to do the great work of love that you're called to.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. I love those 3 points, Andrew. And we wanted to talk today about sacred activism, so this is the perfect opportunity. It's almost time to open up to questions and answers and sharing. And so maybe what we can do is everybody on the call can be thinking.
I can talk about sacred, but I'd love just to talk to you and Leslie and say whether those 3 points truly resonate with the work that you're doing. Is that what you truly...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
You've outlined exactly our whole, the creed of our nonprofit. This is what we do, those three things. And especially what's been growing in our work, and I know in yours too, is the sacred activism.
Yes.
I mean, of course, you've founded the School for Sacred Activism or the Institute for Sacred Activism, but I know that you're working more on projects, especially your project in Kashmir, which we want you to talk about.
I would love to. Shall I just say a little bit about that and then we can go into questions?
Yes, would you please tell us about it?
Thank you so much. In September, I had a very strange thing happen to me. My green card was stolen in India. And if you're ever going to have your green card stolen, try and not have it stolen in India, because the madness of the bureaucracy that you have to go through to get it back is extraordinary. And that meant that I stayed in India a month later, month more than I intended to, and it turned out to be the greatest imaginable gift. And one of the ways in which it turned out to be the greatest imaginable gift is that I reconnected with great friends of mine, Kashmiri friends of mine in South India, who told me of the devastation of what had happened in the floods in Kashmir in September. I'd been aware of those floods, but they were massively underreported in the West. And when I plunged into realizing what had actually happened, that hundreds of thousands of people had lost their homes, that hundreds of thousands of people were living in appalling situations, that hundreds of thousands of people were reduced to the most abject kind of poverty and grief and depression by this disaster. And when I realized, too, that the Indian government had forbidden foreign aid, because India is now on this great Western kick of being the best, able to do whatever needs to be done, doesn't need any foreign help. Then I understood that there was very, very little real money getting to these people. So what I did was to start what I hope will be the pioneering project for a whole series of projects, Sacred Activism Kashmir. And what I'm doing is trying to raise just $50,000. I've raised 20 already, thank God and please God.
Wow, congratulations.
I'm going to build 4 houses for people who have lost their homes and a school that was destroyed for girls. And you could say, well, what is $50,000 and what are just 4 homes and a school? What I would say is that it's a sign of our caring for people going through disaster. And what I'm hoping is that this small project, which I will personally ensure gets, that all the money gets to who needs it by taking it out myself, this small project is a project designed to inspire others to start doing similar kinds of projects all over the planet. Because unless we realize that one of the most holy things that we are called to in a time like this is sacred relationship with all of those people, usually the poor, going through the horror of what we've done, the horror of the environmental collapse that we've created, we're going to become very stony-hearted. So while we have money, let's give it. While we have the capacity to help, let's help as much as we can. So I'm asking everybody on this call to really give generously to Sacred Activism Kashmir. Sell your homes, sell your cars, live out in indigenous nature, trust God to feed you, and give everything to this particular cause. I'm joking, but I really beg you to pony up and give something, because you'll be participating in what I consider to be one of the most important movements of the future. Whether or not we have a future as the human race, we must have a future as human beings willing to help in whatever circumstances arise.
Well, we support you in this, Andrew. This is something you're very dear to our hearts, as you know.
Well, you've been doing it in your own way for so long. You've supported the White Lions. You've supported the building of schools. Core Light has always been, for me, a beacon of sacred activism, because you combine profound spiritual inquiry with real, hands-on, embodied help. And that is the model for the future. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, thanks for recognizing us and saying that. It feels good to be seen. And this is, you know, what we're all talking about here is the embodiment of the love. You know, to take that love and to put it into action in some form. And that's all that we did 20 years ago, or no, not 20, 15 years ago, when we started spending more time in South Africa and realized the problem with AIDS orphans and the outrageous amount of the sheer number of children without parents due to AIDS. And we just knew we had to do something about that. And it broke our hearts, and we followed that call. And I know that's what you're doing as well with your work in Kashmir. And it's, yes. I think there's so many, I think you're talking, we're talking right now.
You have to put heartbreak into action, otherwise heartbreak will paralyze you.
Absolutely.
You have to put heartbreak into direct help, otherwise the heartbreak will completely annihilate you.
Perfectly said.
Yes.
You've
got to roll up your sleeves at this point.
Yes.
Really, absolutely, yes.
It's a question of survival.
Otherwise,
you won't survive unless you help. You won't survive unless you serve. You won't survive unless you act. You won't survive unless you find the reality of love, which isn't just a sacred emotion, a rapture before the beauty of the creation, but a distinct and definite responsibility to turn up as love, acting in love, for love, on every level of your life.
That's it. And that's actually the tagline of the humanitarian arm of our nonprofit, Seeds of Light. Seeds of Light's tagline is love in action.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's sacred activism. So we're brothers and sisters with you here.
Well, I think that one thing we do share, and of course you share it as much, you have the experience of South Africa at a deeper level than I do, but I have to say that for me, South Africa is the most heartbreaking country in the world, and I've never experienced greater heartbreak than I have in South Africa.
Oh, how interesting.
Two reasons.
Oh, tell us, yes.
Because of the astounding beauty of what South Africa is. Nowhere is more beautiful. And to think that human beings have taken that beauty, that outrageous, insane beauty, the beauty of the Natal, the beauty of Kimberwati and the bush, the shattering beauty of the coastline, and turned it into this ghastly corporate state where the blacks have not only not been helped, but have been dominated by mafia black people, and in which the animals are being slaughtered, in which the canned hunting industry is having an orgy of cruelty.
Yes, there are. Yes,
that
all of that
juxtaposition
is.
Between the beauty, this outrageous beauty, and the horror. Actually, when I last came back from South Africa, I couldn't get out of bed for a week because it seemed to me that I just experienced the essential madness of the human being.
Really? Gosh.
Yes.
Everything is there. That's what you're
saying,
really.
Everything.
Well, you know, it's a country that has always been under pressure, but and then the radical changes take place, and it's almost sort of working its way through the fourth dimension, where anything goes, and the dark and the light are having this immense orgy of growth and maturation between white people and black people and animals.
Yes.
And
it's going so slowly. That's the problem, isn't it, in South Africa? And what's so disheartening is the lack of real responsibility of the blacks in power.
No, they've just...
The ANC is a disaster.
But that's what's happening in this country with the younger souls. They think money is the way out, and being dishonest is how you perpetrate and make things happen. So... It's happening there for that reason. It's happening with the younger souls thinking they can survive by grabbing every penny they can find and hoarding it. You know, it's a survival instinct, but it's also a step along the way. It's part of a stepping stone in the journey, you know, because those younger souls really have to have those experiences in order to find out that isn't the way to go. And maybe they'll destroy everything, or maybe we'll have time to wake up. I don't know.
Nobody can know. Can only know that you've been challenged to become one of the ones who embody love in action. That's all any of us can know.
Yeah. Well, those younger souls can only take their next step. You know, they can't leapfrog over certain things. They have to go through them. And so the younger souls are lagging behind, and it's taking time. And hopefully they'll get there before the planet is falling apart completely. So... Yeah, we wait with bated breath. You know, we try to invite and show compassion and show
and embody the possibility. That's the only way you can help.
Yes, yes. Lead by example, I suppose.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to model the joy and the peace and the purpose that comes from living love in action, and hope that your example will be contagious.
Well,
is a very severe lesson in humility, isn't it? Because it's a baptism in one's limitation. The Dalai Lama is limited.
Yes. The baptism into the limitations is what's happening big time everywhere now.
Yes.
And I think that those black people who are running the government in South Africa are just trying to do what the white people did when they were in power, you know.
Exactly.
And they see it as part of
their... But it's particularly tragic because you and I know, and I know this from my talking to black tribal elders, how vastly rich the indigenous wisdom in South Africa is, and how powerful the spiritual experience of those who suffered apartheid is. So they're not resourcing themselves with their own potential resources.
They don't have enough... self-esteem. They feel like the white people are the ones who have it all, and they're copying
the money and the cars and the beach houses.
And they want it. They're copying it. They think that's the way to go. So, so
this has happened in India.
It's
broken my heart.
Of course.
So scary to think of a culture like India, which has had the most sublime spiritual culture for thousands of years of any place in the world, whoring after the folly of the West.
Well, the money.
Yes.
And
actually having a nuclear program, spending billions on nuclear weapons when 400 million people are living on less than a dollar a day. This is insanity. An insanity from the countries that created the Upanishads and the Gita, and it goes on and on.
Well, younger souls, there are more younger souls in this world than there are older souls, and so it's kindergarten, really, you know, for the most part.
Feral kindergarten.
I'm feeling like it's probably time to open to questions
now.
Victoria, have we got any hands up, or would you like to...
I'd love to hear from Carolyn, because Carolyn is such an important voice in all of this, and I wonder how she's heard what we've been saying and what it means to her and how she would add to it, because Carolyn has been working in these trenches as long as anybody, longer, in fact, than most people.
Yes.
Hmm.
Victoria, can you open up?
What I've noticed... Carol, okay, she's here. Many of us have, I was off for about 5 minutes myself, somehow have dropped off of the call and had to get back in. But it looks like Carolyn did get back in about 10 minutes ago, so you've got the mic, my friend.
Thank you, Victoria. Thank you, Andrew, so much for what you are saying. It all just resonates so beautifully with with where I'm at and my work and my experience. Andrew and I have been committing radical mischief for a very long time, and our next piece of radical mischief is a book that I'm working on, which I'm tentatively titling "Dark Gold: The Human Shadow and the Alchemy of Global Crisis." And so I've been sitting here making quite a few notes on Andrew's remarks, and
very good.
The last couple of years, I've been profoundly influenced by Brad and Leslie's work, Marriage of Spirit, and the processing that's in there. And you know, I've been doing some very intense shadow work with that book, and so. You know, I have to confess that when I first heard about Marriage of Spirit and the word ascension, that I had some concerns like, oh, this is just another focus on transcendence.
Yes.
And then when I got deeply into Marriage of Spirit, I realized, oh, no, honey, this is not what it is. You know, this is about down and dirty shadow work. And so I've been using it, and it's transformed my life. You know, my heart has been broken in so many ways and opened, and, you know, I have so much more compassion now for what's going on in the world with people, with animals, so much more giving of myself, of time, of money, and, you know, more and more layers of my own wounding and my own shadow have been stripped in doing Core Light work. And in having a spiritual practice. So I'm just so grateful to you, Andrew, for all that you're doing in the world, for the way you've transformed my life. I love you. I love Brad and Leslie. And I'm just so grateful for this time together and the indigenous wisdom. I just want to underscore the importance of connecting somehow with indigenous wisdom. You know, and if you can do it in person, great. If you live in a place where you can have contact with indigenous people up close, more the better. And if you can't, then to just learn as much about it as possible. And thank you for sharing Uncle Bob with us and his beautiful, beautiful light in the world.
Well, I think that it's very important to give people direct hints as to how they can get in touch with indigenous wisdom. I would like to just give three.
Sure.
If you have pets, go beyond anything you've yet understood about love in your love of them and start loving them with a passionate, deep, calm intensity and start celebrating their unique existence. And you'll find that your relationship will go to a wholly new level of intimacy, and they will teach you intimacy with the creation. First point. Second point, make sure that you spend time in nature wherever you are, even if you're in a city. Go to the parks and sit and commune silently with the trees, with the grass, and just say thank you, thank you, thank you, Thank you for your beauty. Thank you for your power. Thank you for your endurance. That's a very simple practice, but it can help immensely. And thirdly, there's a practice that I was taught by Bob, which I found incredibly helpful. He said, look, when you are walking in nature and in a park, just know that everything around you is registering your presence. Everything around you has eyes, is alive. And that your presence in that park or sitting in your garden has changed the consciousness of every flower, every blade of grass. And imagine that all that you're looking at is looking back at you. That exercise may sound very simplistic, but when you really practice it, it brings you into a subtle unified force field with the embodied creation. So nobody is totally severed from indigenous wisdom. We have it in the core of our lives if we want to just do those three simple things.
Mm. Beautiful.
Wow. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you, Carolyn, for your heroic work. You're just one of the people who I'm grateful is alive at the same time I am, because without you, it would be lonelier.
Back at you, Andrew.
And we echo those sentiments, Carolyn.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Victoria, do we have any hands? Do you want to just remind people how to raise their hands?
And just to say to people, we don't need questions necessarily. It'd be wonderful to hear reactions, because this is very deep material and we're trying to work at the deepest level we can. So how is it sitting with you? What is being awoken in you?
Absolutely. And Andrew, just so you know, that's really what we do. The reason we called it a forum for a tipping point was we wanted this to be not a class and not something that's taught. This is
right.
Definitely everybody's putting their own piece in, because
yes.
We realized a year ago that it's going to take a community. It's going to take everybody putting their piece in to bring us to some kind of breakthrough, some kind of tipping point. So,
well, that's, I think, when you talk about love, you're also inevitably talking about community, because there
yes.
can't be any sustaining of love in action without the building of exactly the kind of community that you're building. We need each other more than ever at this moment to help each other, encourage each other, grieve with each other, hold each other up when we feel defeated and depressed, so that we can continue to go forward together.
Yes, and the community as an aspect of the new paradigm of the heart is really just another thing to
it's
add.
It's another reflection of indigenous wisdom, actually, because what we're doing is building a tribe.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Indigenous peoples knew perfectly well that there could be no continuing truth in society without the whole of their world being united in the sacred. And working together. The shaman, the teacher, was never thought of as a guru or special, but somebody with special gifts who had a special responsibility on behalf of other people. So the community is, the reclamation of community in our time is one of the great gifts of the subterranean indigenous wisdom in our nature.
I love that. Love hearing that. You're right on.
Yes, it's something to add to our list of qualities of the heart, in addition to the love and the peace and the compassion and the gratitude and generosity and all these things. Communities
well,
are very
I think
important
it's
part of
even
it.
More than that, it's saying there is no private liberation.
Yes.
Absolutely.
There is no such thing. That is a fantasy, and that fantasy has been part of the dissociative power of those traditions addicted to transcendence, which basically said the world is an illusion. You get about, you're saving yourself. Well, that is an illness, not the reality. The reality is that if you wake up to the sacred heart, you wake up to the obligation of responsibility, and you wake up to your interdependence with everything that lives, and you wake up to the necessity of a living, conscious community to support you and to be supported.
Yeah, that spiritual attitude is actually narcissism on steroids.
Yes, but it's that narcissism on steroids that has governed a great deal of the mystical systems.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means that they are part of the problem also, which means that that addiction to transcendence can only be rectified by a deep recovery of the interdependent wisdom of the indigenous tribes. That has to be the foundation. Otherwise, our discoveries of transcendence can lead us to subtle megalomania, dissociation, and narcissism.
Right. Well, you know, Andrew, just one thing that something you were saying.
As they did, historically.
Something you were saying right at the beginning that I just wanted to add along those same lines. What I'm finding is getting in touch with the innate animal wisdom in the physical body is actually far more powerful at this point in time for being able to make that connection into the unified experience.
I hear you absolutely. I think one of the things that my cats have taught me, and they are my teachers, is how essential it is to love with the whole body.
Yes.
It's not, the love that we're speaking of is not solely an illumined mental love or a sacred heart love. It's the distilled, transmuted passion of the animal divine in us.
Yes.
So many seekers are so disembodied and passionless and bloodless. We have to recover this primordial sacred passion that the indigenous tribes represent so wonderfully. This thrill of being in a body, in the creation, capable of loving with the whole of our being, the rest of the manifestations of being.
Right.
And it's this passion that is the fuel for sacred activism. So I'm so pleased you said that, so overjoyed you said that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, at this point in time, that's the only way, I think, at this point, to find the presence of the divine in every single molecule of your being, your body, nature, the leaf on the tree, the kitty,
yes.
All of it. Yeah.
And it's an erotic connection, isn't it?
It has that, yes.
It is an erotic connection, and we're so terrified of the erotic.
Mm.
But the truth is that if you're truly in love with the tree, a green of a tree, if you're truly in love with a cat, if you're truly in love with the wooden floor of your log cabin, a wholly new kind of poignant, tender, vibrant adoration is installed in you. And over time, that reveals to you the unutterable sacredness of everything.
Yeah. I love the way you put it. Well, I'm going to remind everybody, if you want to say something or ask something, press star 2. And we actually have 3 people who've already written in something on the Q&A board.
Wonderful.
So those are people who are on the webcast, so they can't speak, but they did write. So while we're waiting for you all who are called in to raise your hands by pressing star 2, I can read what's been written.
Please talk to us.
Yeah, one person, Barbara Flack from BC, says, can Michael Tellinger and the Ubuntu Party offer any hope for South Africa? This call is magnificent. Thank you very much. So there is, as she's talking about, Michael Tellinger, who has started something called the Ubuntu Party in South Africa that is both white people, black people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, his work is inspired deeply by Desmond's work.
Yeah.
And Desmond Tutu has rooted his whole vision in Ubuntu, the collaboration, natural collaboration of all beings.
Mm.
And of course it can help. But we have to be very sober, because at this moment we have to face that the negative paradigm has all the power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that we don't continue to work for what we know to be the truth. But I think it means that we are sober-minded and don't hold out fantastic possibilities, but just continue to do the work for its own sake. That's what
mm-hmm.
I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel one great danger for people at this moment is to grasp on to any spiritual program as a solution. It's not a solution. It's a way of being in whatever happens.
Right. Well, actually, you know, Andrew, when we talk about victim and tyrant, we also talk about rebel and savior. All four of the characters are part of it. And so looking for a savior in anything else is keeping you in that paradigm.
Yes, it's a form of what the Muslims call idolatry, shirk.
Mm-hmm.
Making an idol out of any program, any way of acting, will divorce you from a much more essential task, which is to come into your divine being and then act from that divine being in whatever circumstances arise.
Right. Another excuse not to take the initiation.
And another excuse to use your spiritual enthusiasm as a drug instead of as a fuel for your turning up.
So, all right. So the two.
I hope I'm not being too harsh. I think.
No, you're not.
And I would just like to invite any South Africans on the call to raise their hands and respond to Barbara's question or her comment, because I think it's an important one. And the truth is, I don't know the latest on what's happening with the Ubuntu Party, but I would like to know. So if anybody's got news, they could raise their hand and share.
I think both Ilse and Ali are on webcast, so they might write something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they can write in.
Okay, so Lee in Guatemala says, thank you, Andrew, for speaking with such truth and honesty from the Sacred Heart. There is no way but embracing completely our divine humanity, fully accepting that everything is us, and we have to love each piece with complete humility and unconditionally. This truth resides in equality and acceptance and compassionate love. I feel so honored to be listening to this call, and it fills my heart with love and acceptance. Lee from Guatemala.
The only thing I would say is that when you say have to love, that makes it a duty, and I'm sick of duties. It's not a duty. It's that love becomes inevitable.
Yes.
When you connect with the radiance of the presence. And that the glory of sacred activism is not that, oh, there's a terrible crisis, we might go extinct, you have to do this, you have to do that. No, that's not the way for me. The way for me is to connect with the depths of the truth of our divine nature, and then when you do, love in action becomes absolutely as spontaneous as breathing.
Yeah.
But I loved what he said, and thank you. I hope that my quibbling about that was revealing, not punishing.
Actually, it's Lee is Lee Sa. It's a she in Guatemala.
Ah.
Aha. And so we do have two hands up and one more comment. So let's take one of our hands.
Yes.
Speakers, and then we can come back to the comments, and maybe one of our South Africans will have weighed in on Michael Tellinger. So I can't quite tell who this is. You called in with Skype, so you have the mic.
Hello, hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, you can hear me. Hi, it's Ali here.
Ali, hi.
Oh, good. Ali is in South Africa. Okay.
I am, and I'm sorry, I didn't hear the full Michael Tellinger question because I was actually transferring. I was on the web and I wanted to speak, so I was transferring at that point onto Skype. So I'm not sure I'm the best person to speak about it. I'm not familiar with too much with Michael. I think Ilse may be able to, though, but I don't want to speak on her behalf.
What is your deep reaction to what we've been saying in general?
Oh, Andrew, the reason I wanted to call, I just... Thank you. I feel so much gratitude for the conversation that you've instilled today, and my heart is just going through a sense, exactly what you described, of that sensitivity to everything where there's these deep emotional states, yet it's being held in this incredible strength. So you described the words, and that is okay, that's what's actually happening. Hugely in my heart right now. Your book, The Hope, was very profound for me, and especially the two stories that you've mentioned, the two points specifically. You mentioned one of the amazing story of the Lady with Forgiveness, which I've shared with many people, and it just touches my heart deeply every time I share it with an individual or a group. And also your comments there around what my purpose was, or around your heartbreak as your biggest, you know, gift in what you have to give. And I've been asking Spirit, what is my gift? How can I be of most sacred service in the world? And something that really breaks my heart the most is the Cannes Hunting Alliance here in South Africa.
When you find your deepest heartbreak, you find your mission. Because in your deepest heartbreak is the cause that you will never, ever not feel at a primordial level. So you'd always be willing to pour out effort to try and change.
Yeah.
So if you've discovered that your greatest heartbreak is canned hunting, then it's important to start acting in ways that truly, truly try and end that horrible, crazy process.
Thank you. Well, I asked Spirit, so what can I do, you know, practically? And I've understood from doing a shadow work, you know, with Call Light for a few years, the thing I do know is to process the mirrors that I see. And it that patriarchal, I saw patriarchal bullying in how the hunters actually, you know, affect the authorities to make decisions.
Yes.
Linda's books touched me deeply, and I kind of cried all the way through those. And so, and then 3 days after I'd asked that prayer to Spirit, I had a situation come up with my two brothers, who are both very patriarchal in the UK. They are hunters too. They shoot for sport and train their sons to do the same. And I was in a situation where myself and my mother and my sister-in-law were being bullied in a very covert manner, but I saw exactly the same energy as I see in those hunters of how they bully the authorities, either by bribing or money or threats of their lives. So I'm continuing to do that processing now, and I'm going to visit the Lion. Thank you, Brad, for helping us with that prior to our retreat with Leslie in May. I'm being called to be with the White Lion. I'm going to, if I can, support Linda financially in whatever way. I was guided to add light to the fencing there.
That's wonderful.
And I asked that it would interfere, but it would only add from my heart. I didn't want to interfere with anything or you know, that it doesn't serve what's there. I asked for it to ensure that it was pure and would only add to the strength of it. So if there's anything else that you would advise, I would love. Well, it's really a thank you, but that's coming to me to ask you. I know it's a passion of yours.
Do you know the work of Anna Breitenbach?
Yeah, she's a good friend of mine. I know Anna very well. And I have a cat.
I think
she's
that anything you can do is to support her work, to get the work out so that people can take her courses and help themselves become more astute and more profound communicators with animals is a very important work. Because I know Anna a little, but I have complete faith in her as a person and as a teacher. And I think that one of the ways in which we can serve most the cause of animals is helping those who can truly help others to come into deep communication with animals do their work. So maybe there's something that you can do with and for Anna that would be very helpful.
Yes,
and Andrew, just so you know, Anna was our guest speaker on the forum in October. She's a close friend of ours as well, and we agree with you. Her work is tremendously powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. I don't know any animal communicator on Anna's level.
No.
I'm trying to help figure out ways to help her not take care of, you know, not only see more people or communicate with more people, but not at the expense of her health. So we're
exactly
working on it. We're working on trying to help her.
Well, it might be very important to raise enough money to make a series of DVDs for Anna, in which Anna could give her fundamental instruction in a form that could get onto the internet and help hundreds of thousands of people without her having to do it all the time.
Yes,
that's the principle that we have in mind. We were going to do it not in the form of DVDs, but we have another form, an audio form we were going to use. But we'll see what we can do. Something, some form.
Yeah,
absolutely. DVDs would be the most powerful because Anna herself is such a radiant presence, and also that she can illustrate her teachings with animals, and that would give a kind of total authority to her, and so many people are learning through DVDs now.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Well, we'll bring that up with her next time. We're probably going to see
Well,
her.
I'll help too, because if we could do one of the sacred activism projects could be getting enough money to give her the forum to educate the world on animal communication. And it doesn't take a great deal of money, but it does take some, and I'd be very happy to devote my lot to that.
Wonderful. And you know what I'm remembering, Andrew, is that Anna's planning a conference for next year that she wants you and me and Leslie to be co-facilitators with her of a conference, to be speaking together.
Well, I would do anything for her, my goodness, and for you, yes. Well, where would we do it?
I think she's planning on doing it in Assisi in Italy.
Well, that would be a good choice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun.
Well, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about Assisi, but in a sense, what St. Francis did and does is give the full divine human to us, the fully Christed being to us. And it's so important and so revelatory and has been so forgotten in the Christian tradition that when St. Francis became Christed, he expressed his Christedness not only in loving all human beings, but in this extraordinary, radiant new relationship with nature.
Yeah.
That is the shamanic relationship in the Christ consciousness.
Yeah,
that's ascension, isn't it?
Yes.
In your terms.
Oh, yes, yes.
I just have this really strong feeling that Anna is some kind of reincarnation of St. Francis of Assisi.
Hmm.
Just I think that the Tibetans have this wonderful vision that when a great soul is born on the earth, it can emanate many, many different rays of its sun.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure that in that sense, Anna is a ray of the sun.
Yes. Yes, I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it feels like something is birthing here right now.
Yes.
Coalescing. So we're going to have to get on Skype with Anna soon, Brad.
Well, okay. One of the things that I can share from my own experience is that Anna needs to record her wisdom. She has been schlepping around the planet, speaking it, and absolutely exhausting herself. It needs to be recorded and made available to people so she can rest at home and make a new recording from time to time. But then there's a collection of recordings that people can listen to, and they don't have to, they probably would like to see her now and then. But
if it's a DVD, they can see her. That's the point, you see.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I suppose so. But she won't be present, and so the power is going out without her getting exhausted, which is what happens all the time. She's doing the work in person, and, you know, she shouldn't be live every time she wants to teach.
This is so important, yes.
It feels really important that she collects her work on recordings for posterity.
Well, let's make a pledge that we will help her. Yeah. I will help her. You will help her. And you on the call will help her. Let's make a pledge that we will help Anna get her wisdom out in a way that it can be available to the whole world, because she carries the depths of the indigenous truth.
She does.
And in such a loving and simple and unpretentious way.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that is the way.
She's the example of how to do this.
Mm.
Well, and she's the bridge between that indigenous wisdom and the Caucasian Western race.
Absolutely. As Linda is and as you are.
Yes. Yes. Yes, but this thing of her appearing live all the time is very, very hard on her body. I watch it.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary, too.
Has to end, really. But I love the idea of DVDs, Andrew. I just love it. And she could even show her with an animal when you mentioned that piece. That would be so powerful.
Oh, I just
like the part with her and Spirit in that movie that went viral on the web. So.
Oh, but that was an amazing thing.
Well, I just had
one of the things that changed my life, actually, just seeing her in different situations operate her very, very simple wisdom in totally transformative ways.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just had the idea we can invite her to come and join us when you're with us in South Africa, Andrew, and maybe I've got my video cameras. We can do a little filming there.
I would love that. I would love to be of any help to Anna that I could.
Okay. I'll talk to her and see what we can do.
Okay. We are cooking up some good spiritual mischief here.
That's the point.
For kicking this off, Ali. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I am thrilled. I'm beaming all over. I'm a huge supporter of Anna. She's the most amazing person, I agree. And if this has helped bring something for her to have more support for her work, I really believe that will make a big difference to animals. I've seen how much it transforms people just sharing a movie with people that I know, her, you know, the movie she currently has. So, yeah, thank you. I'm thrilled you said that, Andrew, and just, oh, thank you so much.
My honor, my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Ali, so much. Okay.
Thank you, Ali. Yeah. Thanks for inspiring that conversation.
Yeah. We have another hand. I can't tell who it is. It's Anonymous. So, Anonymous, you have the mic.
Hey, it's Jennifer Hines. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hello, Jennifer.
Yes. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you? Andrew, I wanted to meet you for so many years, and I'm so grateful for you and your work. I've been reading your books for years. And I wanted
Thank
to acknowledge the quickening that is currently happening on the earth, because I feel that we're being driven into evolution and peacefulness, and we're being forced beyond the physical. And I just also want to acknowledge the whole thing of heartbreak, because your statement, out of great heartbreak, we find our mission. And that is kind of how my story has been, too, in this huge heartbreak that I experienced drove me into the only thing that could be more distracting than the romantic heartbreak that I had. And I started studying the methane, and out of that, you know, the tipping point and the methane monster. And that has been a really pivotal thing for me, because I've kind of discovered my mission through that. And Carolyn has been a marvelous, marvelous guide over the past couple of years, and I treasure her immensely, as I do Corelight, all the members, and especially Leslie. Leslie's just been pivotal in my consciousness and development. So I want to thank all of you, and I think that this is such an amazing moment that we're living on in the earth. I'm very conscious of what's happening and where we're going. I don't know the outcome, but my God, what a time we're living in. So thank you so much for your work, Andrew. I appreciate it, and I love you.
And I love you. Thank you.
Andrew, in case you didn't know, Jennifer Hines is the one who was our guest speaker in July.
I know who Jennifer Hines is. She's okay. One of my heroines.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
Just
I
checking.
Am so honored to hear you. The work you've done on methane, making it clear, inescapably clear for everybody, is devastating, heroic work. Thank you for doing that for us and carrying.
It hasn't been a choice. It's sort of I declined twice, but Victoria would have none of it, so she forced me into it, I'm afraid. But I did get myself in a bit of trouble
Maybe.
With it, didn't I? I'm just kidding.
Where are you now, Jennifer? Because I would love to do an hour-long conversation with you on the methane situation as well, if that would be possible.
I'm near Carolyn in Boulder. I'm in her near-term extinction group.
Well, please, please get my number from Carolyn, and let's do either a Skype or an audio conversation in great depth about this, which I can get out to everybody.
Absolutely, and there's more coming up in this as well. I've been in conversation with Guy McPherson on Friday, and kind of a confirmation on Saturday. He wants another presentation. He wants a six-month update on the methane situation. But I hope to bring it to the consciousness, embodying all the spiritual principles and embodying kind of, you know, beyond the drama of it all, and kind of getting to a real, you know, spiritual and sacred place with it. So it adds to the collective consciousness.
Can we do that together? Because that would be something wonderful. I had an hour-long Skype, which has been recorded with Guy on Saturday, yesterday, and it was a wonderful conversation. Guy was luminous and very, very relaxed and very compassionate. And I think our conversation will be available next week, but I'd love to follow it up with something with you so that we can truly do the police in different voices.
I would be deeply honored, Andrew. Thank you for that.
I'd be deeply honored. Your work is astonishing. So much precision and so much heart. You're modeling the divine human. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, for everything.
Thank you, Jennifer. And we can also talk about having you back as a guest speaker in the forum later this year when you develop that piece you're talking about. It sounds perfect for the forum.
Agreed.
Look All what right. mischief we're cooking up.
Yes.
Well, I, when Guy first talked to me, I was like, no, you know, that was a special circumstance. I don't really see anything else coming out of this. That was a special thing that got cooked up. And then I wrote him back the next day, and I said, well, okay, maybe we can do something.
Jennifer, don't play small, darling. You carry the feminine. You carry the divine feminine in this. Guy and I are doing it. I hope we have a very deep feminine, but we're doing it from a masculine, in a masculine body. You're doing it in a feminine body. And the tone that a realized woman brings to this work, and I've experienced this through Carolyn, is so vital. And so many women still feel cowed by the kind of degradation of the feminine that's gone on. Please, please heal any sense of you not being worthy or not being able to do this. You're amazingly able to do this, and it's your responsibility and your mission.
It is, and I've come to that finally, and thank you for your support and holding space for that. So I'll continue my self-development, and we'll get a kick-ass presentation put together for you.
Thank you, my darling. We need it desperately, and you're the one to give it to us. Bless you.
Yeah. Love you all.
Oh, we love you.
Love you.
I've known Jennifer for a
while. I've actually spoken to one of my heroes. Oh, wonderful.
Heroine.
She was an Amazon of consciousness in the making even 30 years ago when I first met her. And she's realizing it now, and it's amazing. Just so gorgeous to see.
And one of the great examples, one of the great movements of this work, I think, is that so much of it is being done by illumined women. I mean,
yeah.
Carolyn, Leslie, Jennifer, Linda, Anna, the list is endless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank goddess.
We're looking for sign-ups.
Yes, we are.
Wouldn't it be incredible if every one of us took on a piece of this work with great gusto and commitment, and then we could get together and share notes periodically and just, you know, give it our all and meet what's happening fully and completely.
It would be wonderful. I think we have two projects already, though. And let's ask people to get behind the Anna Breitenbach project and really pledge themselves to get
themselves
out whatever
yes.
Jennifer can give us. Let's do that as a start.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about this another time, but think about it. Think about it, the way you just take on a piece of activism. You just decide that you can and you will. And you won't regret it, I'm sure, not for a moment.
Yeah. Well, listen, we do have a word from Ilsa on Michael Tellinger. So we'd like that before we finish. Ilsa lives in Stellenbosch area. And she says, Michael didn't do well in the previous elections, but he started working in Waterfallbogen, I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm sorry, where he lives with huge transformation. He is on a very practical way getting the people involved by getting them all involved to work together. They started a community hall and a kitchen giving food for people coming to help clean and build a community, really working from the ground level to get everybody together and creating something where all together well, all are together, I guess. He is doing a lot in getting Ubuntu from the ground, from the ground up, and living what he stands for.
That's wonderful. I think it's, in a sense, it's wonderful he didn't do well in the elections, because Ubuntu will have to be a ground-up movement, won't
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It has to be built from the ground up, and he has to live it, and I'm sure he's a totally sincere person, and he's living it himself, and that living of it himself and that constructing of an Ubuntu community where he is by far the most important way of going forward.
Mm, yeah. Oh, and we have one more hand, by the way. So do we have time, Brad?
Yes, I do.
Yes, that's great. We've still got a half an hour, yeah.
Okay, Lonnie, you have the mic.
Hi, everybody. It's so wonderful to hear you on this call, and this call is very powerful. And I wanted to just share that it's helpful for me, a few things that I've heard from Leslie and Brad and Andrew, and that is that you and Brad have, Leslie and Brad, have moved through this grief of possible extinction, destruction of our beautiful world, and to see Earth as a school, that if that's what it takes for our ascension to wake up to our hearts and to be love, then that's what it takes. And that really helps me.
It takes the fear away, doesn't it?
And the overwhelm of the...
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. And Andrew, to hear you say, you know, to be involved in projects, that the goal isn't to change, that the goal isn't to save the planet, or the goal isn't to create the tipping point. You're just doing it because your heart tells you to. That completely changes the vibe for me. It makes me think of what Bob Randall said, you know, to speak with love, think with love, action love.
Yes.
That needs to happen. And gosh, just hearing you say that, Andrew, just like, wow, it just changed the overwhelm and the responsibility and all of it. Instead of this huge thing, it makes it this just pure, simple, beautiful, okay, I can just offer my love. And
yes, that's all you could do, even if you were Jesus and the Dalai Lama combined. It's finally facing the limitation of human agency, but also the glory of what's accessible to us if we truly surrender.
Yeah.
And if we are contaminated or allow ourselves to be contaminated by results and by an agenda, we'll never pour ourselves out enough.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's too big.
It's too big, but it's also an ego illusion.
Yes, yes, and there's that
That's
part.
That's why the great
aha,
especially the Hindu system, the Gita says, you must surrender the fruits of action to be able to be an instrument of the divine love in the world.
Yes.
Look at what's happened in history. Some of the very, very greatest human beings have offered themselves completely, and their work has seemed to be a complete failure. Look at Jesus. At the moment he was crucified, everybody must have assumed, my God, well, he did all he did, but it's over now. It's not over. We haven't any idea of how our example, our turning up, will affect change. But we can't turn up to effect change. We can turn up to do the work of love and let the Holy Spirit or the Spirit itself take that work and do with it whatever is necessary. That's the humility and surrender that's required of the lover, I think.
Thank you. I'm able to hold this in a whole different way.
Oh, I'm so grateful, because I meet sacred activists all over the world who are overwhelmed, and they're overwhelmed because they're still clinging to the holiest and most beautiful of illusions, which is that they are called to save the world personally, and this is a fantasy. We're called to turn up in a cause that breaks our heart and devote ourselves completely to it, beyond agenda and beyond any attachment to results. And if we can do that, we will be transformed, and our transformation will be contagious.
Exactly.
Mm.
It will be contagious. In
yes.
our, however we do it, in our community, or
yes.
I mean, that's how we spread it. by showing up with our love.
We spread it by being it. It'll spread inevitably if we really are it.
Yes, beautiful. Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you, Lonnie. I think we have to mention here the way you live that love is writing gorgeous poetry. And to watch how you've shifted in that way over the last year has been really quite amazing. And Andrew, as a great lover of mystical poetry, I think would appreciate knowing that.
Well, I would love to see it. Please send it to me. Email some of your poems. I'll be honored to read them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Lonnie.
Thank you, Lonnie. Thank you for articulating that shift, because I think it's the shift that all of us now need to make to be able to continue in what Leslie so beautifully called peaceful functionality.
Ah, yes. Everything can be turned that way.
Everything.
And it can have enormous power. And
it can only have enormous power when it is turned that way. That's
the point.
Truth.
Yeah.
If you're acting from desperation, from anger, you will be able to achieve something. Something will be shifted because that desperation, that anger corresponds to something in the divine heart. But if you allow yourself totally with the peace and the strength and the luminous divine awareness of the heart, then the blessing that flows through you can be so much more complete.
Yes. And anything's good. I mean, I was just thinking about people doing paintings, which is a very solitary thing, and you know, they sell them and they're artists. I'm thinking of a person who has switched from being a medical doctor to being an artist. And then I think, well, you know, what can someone who does something like that do? And then what came to mind was, gosh, it's actually an art co-op, and they could produce amazing paintings that could be billboards that actually tell a message, you know, for this change to humanity, to awaken new levels of consciousness. There's just always a way through something like that, always a way
to celebrate beauty, to express beauty, to keep beauty alive.
Yes, exactly.
And the arts have a very deep role in this transformation.
I think they do.
Singers and artists and dancers, they represent
everybody
beauty
does.
In action, which inspires love in action.
Yes, you don't have to go and march in the streets. You take your particular skill and look at how you might feed that into the collective consciousness in an uplifting way. It's certainly worth thinking about, you know. Every little bit counts, and everything is possible. Anything is possible.
Do you know the great phrase of the Prophet? This is an amazing... it's not in the Quran. It's in a hadith, in one of the sacred sayings. He says, even if the world is to end tomorrow, plant a tree. That goes right to the core of our predicament, doesn't it?
Yes.
Even if the world is to end tomorrow, plant a tree.
That's because planting...
Make an action on the behalf of sacred life.
Yes. It's not really about the tree. It's about the action.
No, it's about you turning up in love and in faith.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Oh, yes.
What's the name of the poet who said that?
He was the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family. Yes.
So much wisdom everywhere. We just have to open our hearts and our minds and our eyes.
Well, the creation is the wisdom body of the light, isn't it?
Yes, it is. My God, when you think about it like that, it behooves us to participate.
Well, we're missing everything if we don't.
Absolutely.
It's as if you've been invited to a great feast and you're not eating.
Yeah.
It's only participation that can take you into the fullness of your divine nature, because the divine itself isn't simply resting and being. It's also acting on every level to nourish and cherish and sustain life. That's what we're called to, because we are holograms of the divine.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh my God.
That's ascension, isn't it? Because it's not going up, it's being everything together, being the transcendent beyond space and time in our deathless awareness, and being intimately connected to every pebble and leaf and plant and flower and animal and human being with the fullness of bodily transformed love at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That is the divine human. That is the Christ consciousness. That is His holiness. That is liberation.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
opening the spigot of love is what we have to do.
Yes.
And let it pour forth.
And not worry with how it's working.
No. Yeah.
Because it will have its own sacred blessing and power.
It will. A lot of the power comes sort of latently from within the person who's making the moves. You know, they may think they're doing this, but actually, if they're really dedicated and excited and determined, they're sending out an energy in the world that is, in a very subtle way, but nonetheless, it's powerful.
I don't think it's necessarily that subtle. I have a story coming up in my mind, and it's a beautiful story. It's a story about the Dalai Lama. I met this guy who was a lift man in an Arizona hotel, and we were buddies. We became buddies and started to talk. He said, "Oh God, I had a completely life-changing experience a couple of years ago." And I said, "Oh, tell me about it." And he said, "Well, I was in the lift with this guy, and he was in a red robe. I had no idea who he is. And the lift stopped, and I was with him for 20 minutes. And usually when the lift stops, everybody gets very anxious and crazy and starts stamping and worrying about their appointments. He became completely peaceful and started asking me about our family, and we laughed and joked. And then suddenly the lift began again, and it opened, and there was half the world waiting for the man in the lift, who turned out to be the Dalai Lama. It's an amazing story, because it shows just how he is, and how just being in the atmosphere of someone who is both profoundly detached and absolutely committed, what that transformatory power is. And all of us can have that if we do the work and be that.
Yes.
Let's be someone who, if the lift stopped, the persons in the lift would be immensely uplifted by, in a completely natural way. It sounds a trivial example, but for me it's a very important example.
Mm.
Well, and what a metaphor that it's a lift.
Yes. And there are people all around like that, don't you find? I mean, I live in the middle of the rural South, and my landlord and landlady are very simple rural farmers, but they embody indigenous knowledge and wisdom and kind. I spend hours every week talking about manure and lives of animals and the connection between the cycles of life and death, because they live them and they embody them. And I found myself that being with people like them has grounded me immensely and has given me great peace.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, yes.
So we're surrounded by people who are living decent, tender, compassionate lives, so-called ordinary lives, but who embody this. And if we attune ourselves to presence, we'll find presence being given back to us in amazing ways.
The heart.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm just looking at the clock, and I'm realizing we're winding down here, and I want to make sure that we have enough time to do an ending guided meditation, which we normally do on this call. And so I want to make sure we also have time for any closing remarks that you might have. But before we do that, Victoria, are there any more hands or sharings on the Q&A board?
Yeah, there is one more hand, and but that's all, just one.
Okay, so let's make that our last one, and if we could be a little bit concise, that would be great.
Okay, well, it's Leslie Ann, and she's very good at being concise. You have the mic, Les.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to share quickly a metaphor that fits in with all of this that I've used for many years, which is the metaphor of being like a flower. And the fact, you know, I live in New Mexico in the desert, and you go walking in remote places, and suddenly you come across this being that is offering itself. It doesn't know or care if anybody is receptive to it or if anybody will ever see it. It doesn't calculate, am I going to have enough rain to know that I can bloom? It just shows up with everything it has in that moment and shares its beauty with the world. It's just been a really profound and wonderful metaphor to go back to on a regular basis when I get lost or lose hope. So in case that's helpful to anyone else.
It's not only helpful, it's revelatory. You know that the Buddha's last act was to assemble, when he was dying, all of his lot. And he was going to have to choose a successor. What he did was to take out from his robe one flower and hold it out in silence. And one being smiled, and that man was Kasyapa, and it was to him that he gave the succession. Because the whole path is in opening for the sake of opening, and for that sake alone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Gorgeous note to end on.
Yes, thank you. I believe that is a gorgeous note to end on, and thank you for that beautiful metaphor, Leslie Ann, as well. And I just feel a tremendous amount of crown chakra energy coming in. I don't know about anybody else, but there's a lot of light pouring in right now.
Oh, yes.
Andrew, do you have any closing remarks, any advice you'd like to share, or anything you'd like to say at all to our group?
I'd just like to read two prayers from the indigenous traditions that we're celebrating. The first is an Ojibwe prayer. Look at our brokenness. We know that in all creation only the human family has strayed from the sacred way. We know that we are the ones who are divided, and we are the ones who must come back together to walk in the sacred way. Grandfather, sacred one, teach us love, compassion, and honor, that we may heal the earth and heal each other. And this is a Hopi prayer. It's called Let Me Walk in Beauty. O Great Spirit, whose voice speaks in the winds and in the trees, whose breath gives life to all the world, listen to your creature. Hear me. I am small and weak. I need your power. I need your wisdom. Let me walk in beauty. And let my eyes be glad beholding the red and purple dawn. Make my hands touch all things you have made with love, and help my ears to hear your voice in everything. Make me wise that I may understand the sacred teachings you have taught. Help me learn the lessons hidden in every leaf and every stone. O Wakan Tanka, I need power. Not to be greater than my relation, but to conquer the enemy in myself. Make me ready to come to you always with a pure heart and with clear eyes. So when the time comes for my life to fade away as the sunset fades, so may my spirit come to you with honor and without shame. For me, the whole of the truth of indigenous wisdom and the whole importance of the truth of indigenous wisdom to our transformation are in those two prayers, and I offer them to you and to the whole world as signs
beautiful. I would so love to have copies of them. Is that possible?
It's in my book, The Essential Mystics, page 10 and page 14. I began the book with what I call the voices of the first day, because I felt that if we're going to have a complete mystical revolution, it has to be grounded in the indigenous tradition. So you'll find those prayers and many other great texts of indigenous wisdom in The Essential Mystics, book I did for Harper's, and I hope that it brings you great inspiration.
Thank you.
We have that book, and so I'll find it, and we'll put those poems up on Caucus one day soon so people can revisit them, and we will put
perhaps
the information.
Take them into their spiritual practice as I do, because they're very powerful prayers, both of them. I find the second one even the most powerful because of its complete teaching of our position in the world and the responsibility of it and of the whole nature of indigenous wisdom. Help me learn the lessons hidden in every leaf and every stone. You don't hear that in many of the great transcendental mystical systems, but it's the key to this radiant embodiment that we are so desperately in need of.
Andrew, thank you so much. I almost feel like those prayers / poems are actually a wonderful note to end on rather than a guided meditation.
I feel so.
Agreed.
Yes.
Yes.
Before we end the call, though, I just want I have one piece of news that we need to share with everybody. And Andrew, is there anything that you'd like to share with us? Any events you have coming up or new books?
Well, I would really just like to reiterate my desire to do this work in Kashmir and beg everybody to make whatever contributions they can to Sacred Activism Kashmir, and also to really try and I would really want to point people to Carolyn's work, because I feel that what Carolyn has been doing in her books from Sacred Demise onward is to build up for all of us at this moment of our transition the most steady, sober guidance that is available. And Carolyn is an immensely important teacher. More and more people are coming to her work, and that gives me great joy. But she needs to be out there to have support, to really have her work be read and taken seriously at the deepest level. So I would just like to honor her and also to ask everybody to really plunge into her work, because I found it myself to be not only the most helpful guide to where we are, but the most inspiring guide, because it's so sober and so exalted at the same time.
Beautiful. Well, we would agree with you on that, and we do encourage people to read Carolyn's books and participate in her work, and so we reiterate that now. And thank you for saying that, Andrew.
Well, and Carolyn and I are going to be doing an initiation in Charlotte at the end of, I think it's in March, isn't it, Carolyn?
I have to unmute her just a sec.
Oh.
We find her in the list here.
Carolyn and I are actually coming together to do an initiation process. It's going to be in Charlotte in April. Yeah. That's what it is, April, and it's going to be 16th, 17th, and 18th of April. So please come and be with us. It's in the Unity of Charlotte Church, and we're going to pour into it everything that we are and know. So I feel that anybody who's been inspired by what I've had to say and also by what Carolyn had to say would be very, very welcome.
Wonderful. And Carolyn, maybe what you can do for us is post the information about that event on Caucus under today's event, and then people who are interested can go there for more information.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And we'll also we have posted on Caucus before the information about Sacred Activism Kashmir, and what we'll do is we'll also repost it under today's event, so
and
that
please, I'd love a copy of this wonderful conversation, which has been so inspiring for me, that I can send it in its entirety to everybody on my email list and everybody on my Facebook.
Wonderful. That would be wonderful. So, yeah, we'll make sure we get you the report.
I want people to come to your work also to support your work. Because
well,
this is how we are acting now in Radiant Community, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is important. And that's why we also support your work and Carolyn's work, is because we believe in what you're doing. And it's just now is the time that we have to come together. The family of light has to come together.
Exactly.
Yeah. So before we end the call, I do need to just give one update to this group, and that is I want to just acknowledge somebody else who's on the call with us today, and that's Judith Kropp. Most of you know Judith Kropp, and she's our friend, and she will be our guest speaker for next month's call in February. It's our last call of the forum for a little while. In the months of March, April, and May, Judith's going to be offering a course for Core Light called Transforming Trauma, Embodying Resilience.
So,
yes.
God, that's it, Judith.
Yeah, it's very important work. Judith is unable to speak today because she's on the webcast. She's not on the audio portion of the call, but we told her we'd be introducing her, and we highly encourage everybody to take that course, and we'll be hearing a little bit more about it next month, because this is also going to be the topic of next month, and we will be addressing the issues that we've brought up today about all the traumas we're facing in the world, and how we get through that and live in love, how we face this chaos and intensity of the world right now. So Judith is a somatic healer and a therapist, and so this is her work. I'm not going to take the time to introduce her right now. We'll do it next week. Excuse me, next month.
What wonderful work.
Yes.
Andrew, this course has been so guided, we cannot tell you. We didn't plan it out, but every single month, Spirit comes through in a very spontaneous way saying, okay, this month it's this topic. This month it's this guest speaker. And we couldn't have planned it better. There's been a progression that's obviously coming from unfathomable intelligence. And so you've been a big part of that today, and we're just so grateful for your wisdom and your humor and your inspiration that you bring, your mysticism, and thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess we're at the end of our time, and thank you.
Lovely if Leslie gave us a blessing from her heart. That
oh, yes, yes.
Let's do that.
All right. Let us begin by being completely at one with one another in this group on this phone call today. Let us truly open our hearts in equality and love and blessings towards one another as we open ourselves to show up, give of our hearts and souls at this very difficult time in our evolution and the evolution of the world and all the creatures and humans living in this world. Let us expand our awareness and be comfortably informed and aware of all of those beings, animal, human, insect, everything, whether alive or not alive. It's all included. It's all part of the wholeness. And let us attract that wholeness wholeheartedly into every cell of our bodies. Let us be at one with this wholeness. Let us believe in it. Let us rejoice in its capacities.
that we may discover all of the truth that is bundled together in every single atom of this planet and every person living on it. Let us become wise and capable of discerning the subtleties of what I just spoke about, so that we may find ourselves at one with life on this earth, with one another, and most definitely with the world and all of its people. Let us completely banish any thoughts of hierarchy, of separation, of duality, so that we may stand in humility, peace, and oneness with everything, ourselves, our friends, our strangers, our world, the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the oceans, and the clouds in the sky, and every molecule of existence. Let us stand as equals, all equal to all of this, and relinquish any parts of us that seek hierarchy in order to make us feel bigger and stronger. Let us be as one. Thank you. May it be so.
Aho.
Aho.
Until next month. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.